On this episode of Video Culture, our Season 2 Retrospective. You won't want to miss it.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another episode of Video Culture. I am your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And this is, a podcast where we talk about movies and talk about, you know, cult classic movies, movies that are our favorites, movies from the past that are just absolutely great, and movies that maybe that we think are great and we go back and watch and realize maybe not. But we've gone through two seasons of this already, Matt.
Yeah. So this time we're not just looking back at movies. We're looking back at times we watched movies. It's very meta. It's very Inception.
Yeah, like talking about movies of us talking about movies, and also the research that goes on in the movies. Because I mean, I certainly love not only watching the movies but learning so much about them myself, doing the research and finding out more about them, and you know, kind of what. You know, what happened in the movie? Like, was it a good movie? Did it make a profit? Did the critics like it? Do audiences like it? All that kind of stuff. And it's just a lot of fun. And we've had a couple of watch-alongs in this season.
Yeah, which was something that we'd always wanted to do. So it was nice to finally to knock that off the old checklist. But really, this episode, it's going to be kind of like, you remember, Ryan, when we were kids and sitcoms would do, like, clip shows?
Yeah.
A little bit like that this week, I think, right?
Yeah, but we're not actually going to play any old clips of the old shows. I mean,
no, because that would require extra editing. Who wants to do that?
Who wants to do audio editing? That's tedious work, my friend.
No, we're just going to talk about it so you guys can imagine it's like that.
Yeah, so, and we started off 2020 in such a different place than where we are now. You know, still under lockdown. I mean, it was, the springtime when we all, you know, went home from being in the office together, working side by side to, you know, I hardly get to see your face anymore.
Yeah, it's weird to think because you can go back and listen to that first episode when we knew we were going to have to split up, which was right before we did the Richard Pryor episode. And then we did the Richard Pryor episode, and we kind of thought, well, this is going to be temporary, and we'll be doing this in the same room again soon.
Yeah.
And here we are, like, 7 months later, and we just kind of got used to podcasting at home now.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was definitely, I mean, yeah, I think I even said coronavirus in one of the episodes, kind of halfway joking about it, and you know, knowing that that's probably going to happen, and because it was happening in the other parts of the world at that time, nobody could really see how much it was going to affect everything, how much it was going to affect us, our entertainment, our interactions, yeah. and everything else. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because really, we just try to continue doing the same thing that we do, watching two movies and then talking about it. You know.
Yeah. The only thing I want to say about it was, in retrospect, it's a little bit funny to me because that was all born out of the idea was we were going to finally have a timely episode. We were going to do a James Bond episode right before No Time to Die came out.
Yep.
And then No Time to Die got delayed.
Yeah.
And we had to apologize because we planned this so meticulously.
Yeah.
That we had to do it then, and we're like, well, now it's been delayed, and we don't know when it's coming out. And as of this recording, it still hasn't come out.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think that was the movie I mentioned the coronavirus because of.
It was, yeah.
So like maybe the coronavirus will, you know, like it'll come out or whatever. So yeah, I mean, yeah,
but we kind of made up for it by we got to do a Halloween episode, we got to do a Thanksgiving episode. So we got to have a few little timely releases with the show this year, which I was pretty pleased with.
Oh yeah, we did. I mean, ever since the start of the show, you and I know because, you know, we do it and we plan it, and sometimes we plan just because, and then some things happen sort of serendipitously, and it happens quite a lot on this show, which I find amazing that we've had so much things sort of like fall in place. I mean, even though the James Bond didn't fall into place like we thought it would, it kind of fell into place with the whole working from home. And then we just recently had one happen when we talked about Monster Squad, and we talked about the documentary Wolfman's Got Nards, which is an excellent title, by the way. And we in the episode, we talked about, oh, it'll come out. Hopefully it'll come out someday. And you were like, yeah, it's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time. Well, that came out on streaming the exact same day that the podcast was released. That episode released, you know?
Yeah.
So it just,
it's like the podcast gods heard us, my friend.
Yeah. It's like they were paying attention or whatever. And you know that had to be in place like a long time ago. And we don't have insider information. I mean, you have certain information, but we didn't have that information.
No,
I mean, I even checked out the website while we were on the podcast itself, and it there was no mention of it until a week or two before or something like that.
Yeah, like I don't think it was announced till like honestly about 2 weeks before the show was planned to drop that they were going to do that. So,
and we were
really surprising. Yeah,
yeah, and we record like a month or month and a half in advance, you know.
Yeah, sometimes as long as 2 months. Yeah, so it's not like you know, we can do these things quickly, and that's why it's hard to make them timely sometimes, is because all this stuff is actually planned out pretty far in advance.
Well, and I don't say just that. That's probably one of the biggest and the most obvious in the last little while. But there's other things that happen too that we talk about, different movies that I'll see blurbs about, or different actors that we talk about, or different directors that we talk about, and they come up, you know. So I'm starting to like after we did that episode, once again, that same episode where we talk about Monster Squad and Poltergeist, I sold a piece of equipment because I have like hi-fi audio equipment, and I'm always like buying and trading gear and stuff like that. And I sold a piece of gear to a guy who lives in California. And I look up his address, and I'm like, he lives in San Fernando Valley. I said, wait a second, that's where the Poltergeist house is. I wonder where the Poltergeist house is. So I looked up that address. I looked up his address. Oh, he's only like 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
I mean, only about five or 6 miles. Like, wow. Like, that's really close. Because I think about what's about 15 minutes away from my house, and that is eerily close to be like from anywhere from all over the United States. Like anybody could have contacted me to buy this one piece of gear, but no, this guy lives like, you know, the next little town over.
Yeah. It's weird how life works out that way, man. I mean, and that's part of that's because, you know, movies touch so much of our lives that when you start to think about everything that goes into them, the people, the way they influence pop culture, you can see those echoes through everything in life. And I think part of that is you're becoming more aware of movies because of what we're watching, and you're seeing those the way it kind of it affects pop culture and people, phrases that they use, things that they talk about. That's where the culture and video culture really comes in.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, even stuff about, you know, that I see blurbs about American Psycho or blurbs about Innerspace. You know, people are, you know, some people are discovering this movie for the first time. It's like, oh, this movie is awesome. You know, somebody will, one of my friends will put it on Facebook, or, you know, a movie group that I follow, and it's like, you know, or the Laserdisc group that I follow, and they'll talk about these movies. I'm like, yeah, we know it's awesome. We talked about it on our show. Like, I watched this a lot when I was a kid. You know, of course it's great.
Like we talked about like 3 months ago. Here's a link. Please don't think we're spamming your group. Yeah.
Or people talking about Batman and how the other thing about Batman that we didn't even mention on the show because it wasn't even news then. We talked about the new Batman, Robert Pattinson in the Batman, and how Michael Keaton is actually going to reprise his role.
Yeah, and they just announced, or it's rumored that he's going to do an HBO series.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's pretty cool. Let's hope that happens. But you know. Well, let's kind of hone in on why we're here today, and that's to look back at what we've watched the past, you know, however many episodes, all the episodes in season two. So that's been what about 24, 25 episodes this season?
Yeah. It was episode 29 through episode 51. So, and then we had two watch-alongs in that space. So if I'm doing my math correctly, if I bring out my calculator, 51 minus 29 is what is 22, right? And then you take two of those away because we know those two are Highlander and War Games, right? Because those are the two watch along movies. Mm-hmm. You wind up with 20 episodes of full episodes of two movies per. So that's 40 movies plus the two, you know, that I just mentioned. That's 42 movies.
Yeah, that's 42 movies. That's more movies than normal people watch in an entire year.
Yeah.
I guarantee you my parents have not watched 42 movies this year.
And
you
know? That's not even counting the movies that, you know, I watch with my kids or I watch with my family or watch with my wife or I just happen to, like, turn on and, like, you know, oh, this movie's on. I'll sit there and watch it, you know, so.
Yeah. And, I mean, those are small numbers for, like, diehard movie fans. But you know, we kind of walk in both worlds. As I'm a diehard movie fan, you're a burgeoning movie fan. So we're kind of both the worlds.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So that's kind of why we're here, to kind of take this journey together from two different perspectives.
Yeah.
But, yeah, still, I think, you know, 42 episodes in a season, that's a good strong number.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you know, the secret to the universe and everything.
Well, it's not 42 episodes, 42 movies. It's 22 episodes, 42 movies.
Yeah, I misspoke.
Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. Because, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of movies to watch. And really, the year isn't over yet, you know what I mean? But yeah,
oh, we kind
of...
It is for me. I'm taking a really long nap after this and not waking up till January.
All right. Hibernation. Oh my goodness! Yeah, but
let's kind of start at the beginning, my friend. Right. So what was the very first thing we watched in season two?
We started off with the animated movies Cool World and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
So let's talk about that. Roger Rabbit. I thought it held up really well. Cool World. Not great, but I liked it more than I thought I would, you know?
Yeah, Cruel World was just one of those... I mean, I kind of made a list of, you know, the most surprising movies and the most disappointing, movies. And I wrote... And both of those lists, those top five lists, were made up of movies that I had not seen before. Because I know that there's beloved movies that we watched throughout this entire season, like The Lost Boys or Dodgeball, Galaxy Quest, one of my favorites, Fandango. But I knew that there was going to be others that I hadn't seen before. And also one of the most disappointing, that was on my list was Core World. Because I think there was such hype around that movie around that time because of MTV and because of other things. It just, I mean, and then knowing now the history of it and how, like, the, you know, producer's son got involved and changed things around and really sort of shifted, like, what it was going to be all about, I think was really telling. And I think I understand now why, you know, or how that movie kind of got where it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely a mess that's got interesting ideas and it's got good elements, but it's a mess.
It is a mess. And I'm surprised they even were able to put it back together, to be quite honest with you know, and knowing what we know about, like, you know, Roger Rabbit, and I didn't even know all the history behind Roger Rabbit. Like, they talked about Roger Rabbit, about the production of it, and it was also very much hyped in a lot of the same way Cool World was. But also it was hyped in the mainstream media because it really was a big effing deal. You know what I mean? And you could tell that even watching it now, how big of a deal it was.
Well, yeah, because they pioneered so much new technology, and you first time you ever had Disney and Warner Brothers characters together on screen. Culturally, it was a big deal, and it just happens to be a very entertaining film on top of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of the a movie that Walt Disney would have made. You know, that really carried the essence of the Walt Disney Company itself. You know,
yeah, just him being innovative and you know, willing to do new things. But yeah, Roger Rabbit, I had no doubt was going to hold up well. You know, I hadn't seen it probably in 30 years, but you just know that movie is going to be just as good as you remember it being, mm-hmm. And of course it was.
Yeah.
From there,
then we went. then we went from that to Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Well, yeah, that was
from cartoons to killing lots of people.
Well, that's, you know, we do every 10 episodes, we do a movie and its sequel, yep. and that was one of our 10 episode milestones.
Yeah, episode 30.
And I've wanted to talk about Tarantino for a while because, I mean, he's an influential filmmaker to me. I like most of his stuff. And Kill Bill has so many things that I like in it. It's got kung fu, western, samurai stuff. There's so many things that I personally love as a film fan. It's like someone cracked my head open, mm-hmm. and like made a movie out of my dreams, you know?
Well, I was going to say that about Tarantino. I was going to say almost the exact same thing. Like, if you want to peek into Tarantino's head, watch Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. I mean, I know he's made some amazing movies, and I love them and treasure them, and Pulp Fiction is part of, part of our pop culture, really. It's made it out of, the cult and into almost, pop culture, and, you know, but yeah, you're right. It carries a lot of elements that I think Tarantino and I know you hold dear, and I think that is just to go to show because both you and Tarantino have such a love for movies and cinema and those specific genres as well.
Well, in a way, they're genres that have always kind of been seen as low genres or trashy genres, but they have so much artistry and imagination and creativity that, you know, I just can't help but love him, and I think he feels the same way, and that love is really apparent in Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. I also think it's one of the movies where his influences are the most laid bare. He doesn't really synthesize this stuff into something new. It's just here's this thing I love from this kung fu movie, here's this thing I love from this samurai film. Remember this bit from this western? I love that part. And it's more of it's more naked than the rest of his film work, if that makes any sense.
It's more of his homage to all of his sort of favorite things.
Like he's not trying to reinterpret it, he's just showing it to you.
I think that may be why it may be hard to come up with a Kill Bill Volume 3, you know, or a continuation of the story.
And I also think this was the only real action movie we really covered all season, wasn't it?
Yes. I believe, if you count The Highlander.
The James Bond. I guess we did cover James Bond, but we'll get to James Bond in a second. But I have trouble thinking of that as action films. Well, anyway, moving on down the list, we have.
One other thing I was going to say about Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 that I wanted to say is that that movie was a little bit, I remember watching that and sitting down and watching it. It was kind of hard to watch, and some of these really violent films, because I'm a parent now, you know, I have two kids. It's the way that I see violence, like, is a lot different than how I saw violence as when I was younger. And
yeah,
that does not make, there's no, like, I guess sort of like lead up to any of it. And it's all like rather real. Like the first sort of scene, she's fighting like the, you know, the girl and it's like in a suburb and like the kid's getting off the bus. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, this is getting too real. It's one thing when they're in like the conference room and she's like slicing the dude's head open and there's like, you know, like cartoony, like blood spew, but it's like, it's a different sort of thing when it's like, it kind of hits close to home when there's kids around. So.
Yeah. No, I think that's one thing. That's one thing that's interesting is how we interpret media as we grow and change. Like, I used to really like horror movies when I was younger, and the older I've gotten, the less I actually enjoy horror films, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've, you know, I've had friends who passed away or been through really tragic circumstances, so I can't help but think about those negative things when I watch horror films sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so it's made it harder for me to be, like, really gung-ho about watching them now as I am in my 40s than when I was in my 20s, and I was all like, yay, Leatherface, or yay, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm just a different person now, and that's affected how I engage with media.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it might be a little bit hard for me to watch, like, Scream or something like that, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'll go ahead and let you guys know, it's actually not quite Halloween here yet. We record these in advance, and I'm still kind of debating what I'm even going to, if I'm even going to watch any real, like, horror type films for Halloween yet, and I could get my geek card pulled, but you know, I'm just not really feeling it this year because this year's been pretty dark.
Well, that's one of the reasons I like, you know, stuff like Army of Darkness and you know, Evil Dead and all that kind of stuff, because it's a little bit fantasy and it's horror like mixed in together.
Yeah,
so you can kind of like apologize for all the, you know, blood and kind of gore because it's. Kind of like steeped in other things. I mean, and even, you know, like other movies like that, that kind of like where they cross genres, like, you know, kind of like Near Dark, kind of did, you know what I mean? So, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Going next after Kill Bill was, the music ones. So Tender Mercies and Light of Day.
Music melodramas. Yeah, that's one I'm really interested to talk about. Cause I got to say, this is the one we took the biggest chance on.
Yeah.
This season, I think, because we knew Tender Mercies was an award winner,
mm-hmm.
but I remember we were really excited about Light of Day because we're like, a Michael J. Fox movie where he plays a guy who's in a rock band. I've never even heard of that one. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and you know that Michael J. Fox learned how to play guitar, so we've all seen, you know, Back to the Future and him, you know, playing Johnny B. Goode. So, you know, he even tried, you know, his hand in music and stuff like that. Like, oh, here's his music movie. Michael J. Fox and Joan Jett,
and I found out it was written by Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver and Blue Collar, and made all these really great films. I'm like, this is going to be like a lost classic, and sometimes when you think that, you know, it doesn't work out that way. And Light of Day, while it's not terrible, there's a reason no one really remembers it. It's very mediocre.
Yeah, what I find funniest about Light of Day was the fact that it actually got, what was it, 3.5 stars from Roger Ebert. You know?
Yeah.
Which I don't really quite understand. It's a 53, you know, Rotten Tomatoes critic score, 52 audience score, but Ebert gave it 3.5.
Well, you know, every critic has things that they like that they maybe hit some sort of sweet spot within himself. Where he responded to it, you know?
Yeah.
You still bring your own biases to things and, you know, stuff like that.
I didn't read his review. I know you can go read it. It's out there at RogerEbert.com. The show is not affiliated or sponsored by Roger Ebert. But I, you know, I didn't quite agree with it. And not all the time do we agree with Roger Ebert. But I just found that surprising. Light of Day was also in the category for most disappointing for me. Because I just think that it didn't really resonate, and I don't really think that it's like Joan Jett's fault. I don't think it's really anybody's fault. I mean, we know that Bruce Springsteen was involved in the production early on, but what happened to it, like, after that, we just, I don't know, I thought the execution was just, like, really kind of crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not good. You, like, if you look at all the elements on paper, you got Michael J. Fox, Joan Jett, Paul Schrader, Bruce Springsteen, you're like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
And it's just, all those things add up to a movie that's just not very good.
Yeah,
just
and
really surprising.
Yeah, and her Glory of Rock speech at the end. Sorry, that's my
song.
My is I mean, it's just a little bit over the top. I, you know,
yeah, it's kind of nonsense. Yeah, like I remember watching, be like, that's a bunch of BS.
Yeah, I mean, even if it came from a guy, it'd be like, really, man, the Glory of, really, this is what's happening. Yeah. You're abandoning your child because of this? I don't know. Anyway.
But Tender Mercies was good.
Yeah.
And it, of course, Robert Duvall is an acting god.
Yeah.
Like, he's amazing. I'm going to say I didn't like Tender Mercies as much as I expected to. I found it a little too melodramatic. Even I know the name of the episode was Music Melodramas.
Uh-huh.
But it laid it on really thick by the end.
Yeah. Well, I will say, going back, I mean, I think I like that movie a little bit more than you, but going back and thinking about it, you know, the dialogue is really sort of like down home, you know what I mean? And it is really kind of awkward at times and places, and it doesn't really have a good, like, sort of flow. But I think that Robert Duvall was just, like, so authentic in that movie. It's worth a really good watch just to watch his performance.
I would agree with that, definitely, yeah.
All right, so moving on to the next episodes, Lady Hawk and Excalibur. We did some fantasy. We did.
Yeah, some high fantasy. And, you know, I like both these movies. I like Lady Hawk more than Excalibur. But I definitely enjoyed both of them.
See, and I like Excalibur more than Lady Hawk.
Well, that's why we do the show.
Yeah.
But I found them both fun. I was still very taken aback by how horny Excalibur was.
Yeah,
it's a movie that's really all motivated by like guys wanting to eat with girls, and I remember being really surprised by that was the main driving plot point of the entire film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sexually driven, very sort of male, chauvinistic, like sort of oriented. But still, I think it was a feat to accomplish with, you know, the budget that they had and in the time period. And so I thought it was a great sort of storytelling of Arthur and all of that. I mean, to you know.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a beautiful film, and it's interesting to watch. I mean, they're both fun watches. The score in Lady Hawk is still the worst score I think we've heard all season.
It's terrible.
Well, the worst.
It was a mix of a mess. So then, moving on to Inner Space and the Burbs.
I think this was the first like double feature where we were like, yeah, both these movies are awesome.
Yeah, we were like, okay, we got to choose some like awesome movies. We're tired of these like movies that are like, oh, this one's kind of cool. This one's kind of okay. Yeah, this one's kind of cool. We were like, okay, we know Inner Space is good. We know The Burbs is good. And it was really awesome and really like, I don't know what you would call it. Like, you know, when you want the thing, when you're like, I'm really craving, you know, something, and then you get to have it. It was that sort of thing, right? Like just being satisfied of your cravings.
Yeah, like
I really want fast food. You know, not really like anything fancy. You just want, you know, the stuff.
Yeah, and like then that was it, man. These movies really sated that hunger. Like I'll tell you, I mean, I wanted to believe Inner Space was going to be good. I had not seen it in forever, so rewatching Inner Space and realizing it was that good was such a pleasant surprise, man. Because I really loved revisiting Inner Space.
Mm-hmm.
So much fun. I'm going to say it again. I love to watch Martin Short dance. Mm-hmm. Like that is one of my happy places, I think, is just watching him dance. I don't know why. It just makes me smile. And it makes me feel kind of warm and fuzzy inside.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're getting to where he sings about dancing and smiling, and later, you know,
with the sweetest smile. I also adored that, so, yeah. He is my little buttercup, apparently.
Yes, he is your little buttercup. But yeah, I mean, I just thought that the cast was really, really great in Inner Space, and I think that it was just like so well directed and so well put together. You didn't even question whether it was believable or not. You were just like along for the ride, and I thought that was, I think that movie is just like great. And The Burbs, I mean, of course, it's got you know, Tom Hanks in it. I mean, I'll watch almost anything with Tom Hanks in it. Let's be honest.
Same. Yeah. Tom Hanks, Carrie Fisher. I mean, great cast. I mean, and really what that made me feel was I wish Joe Dante would just make more movies.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a few misfires, but he's had so many things that I just think are great. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see him work again, and it's a shame he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Dante, if you're out there, we love you. Big heart goes out to you because, I mean, we think your movies are fantastic. You know,
and if you want to be on the show, please contact us. We'd love to have you.
Hit us up on Twitter, or if you're on Twitter, or send us an email, like go to video-culture.com. And also for those that are listening, if you are wondering where these episodes are, if you listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, you might not see some of these episodes because they only go back about 15 episodes. So you can always go to our website at video-culture.com and you can listen to the episodes there straight from your phone or portable device or wherever, and look at all of our past episodes, even going back to season one.
So yeah, it's got all of our nonsense cataloged very neatly for you.
All right, so now we've covered that. We're going to move on to, now I've heard you talk about Near Dark so many times. I just had to fit this in here somewhere because there were two movies that were made around the same time that were both about like a group of vampires, and one was called The Lost Boys and one was called Near Dark, and your like leaning is to Near Dark, like for really good reason.
Yeah, but it seems like over time, Lost Boys became the more revered one, and I always thought that was a kind of a travesty because Lost Boys is good, but I'm sorry, Near Dark's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least how I feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was who's the director again? What's her name?
Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, Catherine Bigelow. What other movies has she directed? Like, what is she?
Zero Dark Thirty, Strange Days, Blue Steel, Point Break.
Right.
Yeah,
and this was, you know, kind of a mixture, too, of, like, two genres where you had, like, horror and, like, sort of Western mixed in together, where this kid gets mixed up with, like, kind of, like, the wrong crowd. And, you know, it's a fantastic movie, and to me, I think the greatest feat of that movie, when I go back and look, and I look at the stats, and I put everything on a spreadsheet, and I go, Near Dark had a budget of $5 million. $5 million, that's it. They did that movie for $5 million. And the budget for The Lost Boys was like $8.5 million, okay? But really, there's not really much except for like kids talking, right? There were some special effects. Probably most of that was special effects. And that's one of the reasons that why that had low budget, because if you did that, if you did The Lost Boys, but you did it with like adult actors, it would be like three times as much because you got to pay all those actors. Like kid actors work for pretty cheap, you know? But
there weren't any movie stars in Lost Boys, really.
Not at that time.
But really, well, the other thing that makes Near Dark superior to me comes down to, I mean, Near Dark has one of the all-time great Bill Paxton performances. Bill Paxton is legendary in Near Dark. He's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's as cool as everyone likes to make Kiefer Sutherland out to be in Lost Boys. Like, I mean, everyone acts like David from the Lost Boys is like the coolest vampire. No, man, it's Severin from Near Dark. Every day of the week. So much cooler, so much more badass, so much more rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Bill Paxton's performance. Absolutely stunning. It's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, I also think that movie is like really weird because when I look back at the stats too, the Lost Boys, the critic score is 74 and the audience is like 85. For Near Dark, it's like flip-flopped. The critic score is 88 and the audience score is 74. So it's like one is a little bit more loved by critics and a little bit less loved by the audience. One is a little bit more loved by the audience, but a little less by the critics.
Well, the way I look at it, the reason Near Dark doesn't have that kind of audience score is because some people still don't know about it. It's still kind of an unknown film.
Right.
I mean, it's championed by guys like me who all we do is watch movies.
Right.
But your average person on the street does not know Near Dark.
Right.
Your average person knows Lost Boys.
I think this is the one movie, like the first movie, I think, of this entire season that you would definitely classify as a cult classic. Right? Is that correct?
For sure, yeah.
Because it's one of those underground cult movies that not everybody knows about. It's not in the pop culture vernacular like The Lost Boys is, but it's still a fantastic movie. And it's one that's like, oh, you want to watch a vampire movie? Let me tell you about this.
Yeah, it's one that I definitely feel like we have to wave the flag for.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we made sure, not only did we talk about it, but we had even had a deep dive article on it on the website. Actually, had a written piece on it as well by our boy Patrick Bartlett, who is sort of our silent member of video culture.
Which we will get him on the show at some point, hopefully.
At some point, yeah. Once we can figure out how to do like a third person with this weird teleconference setup we've got.
We can do it. We can do more than one. Yeah. All right, so, but yeah, moving on. Then we went Bond, James Bond.
Yeah, you know, I never liked James Bond that much, and after watching these, I still don't like James Bond very much.
Well, at least you got to see, like, you know, what people love about Sean Connery so much and about Bond, and, you know, what that sort of, like, sort of classic character is and what they're sort of chasing after in all the Bonds. And from what I understand now, like, this is the new Bond that's come out that we talked about is the last Bond with the current Bond. Like they you know, they always want like a younger, you know, Bond or whatever. They don't want him to get too old or whatnot. And I think it's great because if you're a fan of like Austin Powers, then you know you need to see, you know, some of the old movies, because that's especially all that, that's all he's ripping off. That's all he's ripping off. It's just all the Bond movies, Dr. No, you know, all the stuff.
Especially Dr. No, yeah. But I just, you know, I understand why people like it. It's just, it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little too dry.
Yeah.
And it's just not my thing.
Yeah, it's it is a thing. But yeah, it's too contrived for me, to be quite honest, really. Cuz it's like, and too almost predictable, but a lot of people that go to the cinema, that's kind of what they want, right? So
that's very true.
All right, moving on to okay, so Red Dawn and Toy Soldiers,
Wolverine. Sorry,
yeah, and I put I put Red Dawn in one of those, like, you know, most surprising movies. I did not realize how much I would really like it.
Well, you know, and I'm a John Milius guy because he did Conan the Barbarian, he did Dillinger, he wrote Apocalypse Now, so like I dig a kind of his masculine, you know, like warrior poet nonsense. So I kind of knew I would like it. I had not seen the whole thing in years. But it held up really well, and it reminded me what a great movie star Patrick Swayze is.
And C. Thomas Howell.
Yeah.
You know.
I feel bad for C. Thomas Howell, man.
I really do. I do, too.
Yeah. But, you know, he did Soul Man, so he was asking for it.
Well, I mean, man's got to eat. But, you know, and you don't have control of these things. But, yes, I mean, but, yeah, C. Thomas Howell in two of the movies that we watched this season – and both in The Outsiders and in Toy Soldiers. It's so good, so dramatic. I would love to have seen him like in some sort of like off-Broadway play or something like that. I mean, he was just like, he was so good at monologues and stuff. It was just so capturing. And yeah, Patrick Swayze, how he just like played that I mean, because he was also in The Outsiders, plays that like older brother character like so well, who's also like scared himself, but his character was like so, you know, didn't want to show vulnerability, but you know, at times he did. But just I thought it was a fantastic movie. Even if it was, you know, even if it was redone by you know, Sobchak or whatever.
Yeah, I actually watched part of the remake recently.
You did?
And that remake is terrible.
Really?
Yeah, like I remember it being bad, but it's worse than I remember.
Mm. I say Walter Sobchak in the most loving way, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know. Well, John Milius is very much like that character. There's a reason that character is based on him.
Right.
But Toy Soldiers, man.
Toy Soldiers.
What a great movie. Yeah. That's another cult classic, in my opinion.
I agree. Because it has such a like an all-star like child actor cast as well, like Will Wheaton and who else was in that movie? So many.
It's got Will Wheaton and Sean Astin.
Sean Astin, yes.
You're trying to think of Sean Astin.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
but it's got such a great script, and it's you know, it's basically Die Hard in a boarding school,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so it's got such good tension. Louis Scott Jr. is great in it. Just a really great like video store staple. Like it's one of these I remember just being like a constant in the video store, and it was one I hoped would still be good, and I was pleasantly surprised to watch it again. Like. Not only is it good, it's really good.
And I had a funny story about renting the wrong Toy Soldiers from the video store.
Yeah, which... they gave us one of our more popular written articles on the website for a while was your story of watching the terrible 1984 Toy Soldiers.
Oh, God, is it
with Cleavon Little and Tim Robbins?
No, is it terrible? Oh, I bet Tim Robbins wished he never would have made that movie. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of terrible, let's talk about the toy.
Oh,
so much racism.
Oh, that was that's another one of my, you know, most disappointing movies. Because I liked it when I was younger, and I thought it was fun, and I thought it was like all this stuff, but like so many tongue in cheek with the, you know, with racism and slavery. It was just terrible.
Yeah, like I kept seeing like the GIF from that show Wonder Shows, and that one kid saying that's racist over and over again as I was watching it, and you know, and I love Richard Pryor, man, but that it made me uncomfortable after a while. I'm like, yeah, it's because the characters never learn anything, they never apologize for being racist.
No,
it's weird. But on the other hand, Brewster's Millions, which we watched with it. I loved it, man. Brewster's Millions, the remake by Walter Hill.
Yeah.
Really fun.
Really fun movie. I did not know how much that movie, that's one of the, you know, things I loved about doing the research is I didn't know how common that movie is and, you know, how many times that movie has been made. And I think it's almost time for a remake if somebody wants to make, you know, a good remake. And... you know, they can think about how they want to do it in several different ways that would be the most fun. But, yeah, from a down and trodden, like, minor league, you know, baseball player to having to, you know, spend millions and millions of dollars and not have any assets. I mean, it's just I thought it's a great movie. And it made me just – it made both you and I, you know, really miss John Candy and Richard Pryor.
Yes, because we always talk about these about some of these older comedic greats who are no longer with us, but you know we can always say they're great and talk about how great they are. But when we rewatch their stuff, we realize that our words don't really capture it well enough about how just phenomenal and likable and endearing these personalities were on screen. And yeah, just. I miss both these guys so much as like regular creative forces in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of, what was the movie with Trading Places? You know, you would love Brewster's Millions. I mean, it's just,
yeah. Trading Places and Brewster's Millions would make a really good double feature for
it
sure.
It really would. I think, you know, and I think it would be fantastic. But moving on, because we got a lot of movies to get to, and we're only like a little bit more halfway done, so we gotta speed it up here. So the next one was The Replacements and Hardball. So we kind of took a look at Keanu Reeves' like different films
about sports.
Yeah, about sports, and I mean, even though it's kind of tongue in cheek, The Replacements still a great movie.
Replacements again, I think that's. That's another movie that I think really almost deserves the cult classic status because it's so good and nobody talks about how good it is.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And Hardball, you know, still kind of fun.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. I mean, it's not like great, or you're not going to be like, yay, Hardball, or you're not going to buy a Do It For G Baby shirt or anything. Yeah. But, you know, it's still a good movie and it's worth watching.
Yes. Then the watch along,
our very first one.
Yes.
You saw Highlander for the first time.
Yes.
The weird rock fantasy, like medieval, like, yeah. I don't even know what you would call it. Like mashup.
Yeah.
That is Highlander. So what did you think of it, Ryan?
I mean, I thought it was a great movie. I thought, okay, so here's kind of my, thinking about the movie, and my wife tells this story. Back when she's in college, I don't know if I told you this story or if I told this on the show, but I'll try to be quick about it. But basically, my wife tells a story where she's in college, right? This is like probably late 90s. And, you know, she's like with a group of girls and they're like doing, you know, they live on campus and they're doing like a, you know, social mingle thing, like meet your other people that live in your dorm or whatever. And, you know, this one guy is like, oh, honey, do you watch The Highlander? You know, and they're all like looking at each other like, what?
Yeah, because let's face it, that's a thing, man. People who love The Highlander often are big geeks like myself because I love The Highlander.
Right, but I mean, to go up to, but you wouldn't go up to like a group of girls and ask them if they watch a Highlander. I mean, right? So,
Lord, no.
Yeah, especially when you know that they're wearing like Birkenstocks and they definitely look like they're about to go to a Dave Matthews Band concert. No, you wouldn't do that. But anyway, but I'd never seen it. I'd never watched it. So I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much like everything that we like about 80s movies all in one movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's got Queen soundtrack. It's got like old school fantasy stuff. It's got like fight scenes. It's got... You know, it's got all that different stuff. There's like spy and like espionage type stuff going on. There's like, you know, people like, you know, the fantasy, like, you know, where you have to like, I don't know, whatever happens when they die and they like float away or whatever they do. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, it's like a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of fantasy. Yeah. It's a little bit of an action film. It's a little bit of a romance. Mm-hmm. And again, it's all wrapped up in this amazing Queen soundtrack.
Right. And it's also kind of like going from old world to new world, you know what I mean? Kind of like I explained on the show, like Star Trek IV, where you're like, you know, in the modern world, you know?
It's almost a time travel movie on top of that. You know, it's got a little bit of that time travel movie type vibe to it. Like, it's just got so many different flavors, and they shouldn't work well together, but it makes a really tasty stew.
And it's got Sean Connery.
And who doesn't love Sean Connery?
and this beautiful outfit. Don't you like my outfit? I still want that outfit. Like, that would be, like, my cosplay outfit would be his outfit from...
You know, considering your beard and your hairstyle, it actually it would work pretty well for you,
I got a lot of grandma beard. I mean, I'd have to, like, cut it like the way he did. But, yeah, it might actually kind of work.
So after that, we hit episode 40, where I finally get to talk about... My hero, my favorite American actor, Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage, in one of the most popular movies that he has ever been in, National Treasure 1 and National Treasure 2.
And you would think that there would be like terrible, terrible like mainstream bullshit movies, and they're really not. They're actually really, really wildly entertaining.
Well, I mean, they're Disney movies. I mean, they had Disney behind them. They're not going to make, you know, anything, you know, crazy. But this is where Disney wanted a piece of the pie. This is like the beginning of, you know, they did National Treasure, and then I think right after this, the adult movie they did was like Pirates of the Caribbean and all that.
Yeah, and they tried to reboot Tron. They really wanted to get on that like teen boy market.
Yep.
They wanted to get into that like, you know, like superhero genre stuff to try to attract young male fans. Mm-hmm. And they eventually just gave up and bought Marvel. So that's how they end up solving that problem. We'll just throw money
and,
at
and
it.
And Pixar. Like, so, you know, like, oh, yeah, our animation studio is not doing so well. We'll just buy Pixar. Not to take away from Disney, to go back to Nicolas Cage. I mean, but such beloved films, but I don't think that they still get the credit that they do. I mean, critics, like, really, you know, bashed on it, 44% and 36%. But I still think that they're fascinating, entertaining movies. I mean, there's no, you know, difference between, you know, this and some other far-fetched movies like Independence Day. So, I mean.
Yeah, I think it's become very popular to you know, crap on Nicolas Cage. But if you watch these movies objectively, he is a perfectly good mainstream movie star in these. I mean, he's funny, he's interesting, he handles the action well.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like I said, I will forever beat the drum that he is super underappreciated, super underloved. And I'm not talking about like ironic love, like you see so much on the internet for him. But I mean, I legitimately think he's great.
Mm-hmm.
And these films show that he is very multifaceted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love all of his quick, quips and that sort of stuff, and always being like one step ahead of the whole game. It's really, really, really good.
Well, let's go on to the next movie where that's a little bit God. Like National Treasure, but it's probably the thing I hated most we watched all year.
The Golden Child.
And that is The Golden Child.
The Golden Child. Also, I think, is that on my list? Yes, it's on my list of most disappointing.
Yeah, it's definitely my most disappointing film for the year. I hated it, man.
You really hated it. Yeah. You really thought it was I just thought it was remixed to be like another Eddie Murphy, you know, detective Beverly Hills Cop movie, essentially. I mean, they just took the concept and made it into Beverly Hills Cop, essentially.
Yeah, and it's the effects are pretty bad in it. The humor doesn't work. Eddie just comes across as a jerk through most of it. But on the bright side, the other movie we watched for that is a movie that's one of my all-time favorites, and that's Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
That is the weirdest movie that I have watched this season, and probably still be the weirdest movie that I'll watch across this whole thing. I mean, just
absolutely.
I mean, to be quite honest, I had a hard time kind of following it at first, and then, but like once you get into it, you're like, it's like a spectacle, and you can't just put it down. It's just like, this is just too crazy, and it's still like, you know, there's still some like fun elements in it and stuff like that, and you're. But yeah, just like not expected. I did not expect that movie.
Well, if anything about this whole endeavor of doing video culture, has any kind of point or any sort of positive thing that comes out of it, at least I got you to watch this movie and then talk to me about it for an hour, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. I sat there and was like, WTF through like half of it. But still, I mean, it's still great.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so much fun. And, I hope you go back and rewatch it at some point. Mm-hmm. It gets better every time you watch it because you start to understand it better. It flows better. And you get into, like, the vibe of it better.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you really have to understand the vibe of it. And but, yeah, definitely a wild, wild, wild stuff going on in Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Speaking of other wild movies, we talked about another one of my favorites, and I got two in almost a doubleheader. We talked about The Warriors.
Yeah, that's actually on my list of the most surprising films that I really liked, because I knew that The Warriors is such a big, you know, cult classic, cult favorite, and it's even made its way into a little bit into pop culture, even like a Simpsons episode. And, you know, some other things, but and parts of it, too, I think have sneaked into other things, and they don't know that it's that they're really like riffing on The Warriors. Like, they don't know where it came from. Yeah. And like to go and watched that movie was, I really loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And it came on TV like about a couple months ago, and I was like, oh, the Warriors, and I watched it.
Well, and I'm glad you felt that way, because the Warriors is formative to who I am as a movie fan. That's one of the movies that's really ingrained in my movie fan DNA of what I like about movies. I saw it at such a young age that it was really formative in developing my taste in film.
Listen up, all you boppers. It's so iconic, and I think it's deliberate in that way. And also to go back on what they did with the budget, they only had $4 million. They did that movie.
But so many big ideas, and sometimes all you need is strong ideas to make a movie work.
I mean, I'm looking at this budget, a list, and they're like $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, $17 million, and it's seven. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. Or $4 million.
Well, and we paired the Warriors with the Outsiders, which made a good double feature, I thought, because they had a lot of overlap. And the Outsiders was a movie I had never seen before. I'd only read the book.
Are you serious?
And yeah, I had never seen that. If I remember correctly, I'd never seen it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think we talked about that at the time, or at least I hadn't seen it in a long
time.
Maybe
I just forgot that you didn't see it. Man, wow. Okay.
Or maybe I'd only see part of it. It all blurs together now after doing this so many weeks.
I mean, I think I watched it in class.
Yeah, we never watched it in my school, but we read the book.
Okay.
And it's a really good adaptation of the book, I think. But it's it does pale a little bit compared to the Warriors, because the Warriors is so strong. Mm-hmm. They're both good, but Warriors is, iconic.
I almost kind of didn't like the director's, recut with some of the music and stuff like that. It made it too sort of light, and I thought without that, it made it a little more serious. And there's also a couple other scenes where, the boys have to, kill a rabbit and stuff like that. I mean, it just makes it more, for food, they kill a rabbit when they're, hanging out at that church and stuff, and I don't know. I just think that made it more kind of tough and more rough around the edges. And they definitely tried to clean it up a little bit for the Blu-ray edition. But I still think it's a fantastic movie. I mean,
it's good, but I definitely prefer the original cut of the Outsiders.
Yeah.
Much like I prefer the original cut of the Warriors. Both those movies are united in the fact that they're director's cuts. Are definitely weaker versions.
Right. There's very few movies that I like the full director's cut. But we can argue back and forth. But movies what was it? I can't think right now. My brain is fried. We're going to move on.
It's all right.
Three Amigos and Galaxy Quest.
Two movies about that are basically have the same plot.
Yeah. Where they're imposters, right? And then they're found out, but they kind of go along with the plan until they're found out, and it's great to see on two different sort of things and two different eras sort of, but I mean Galaxy Quest is such a great movie, and Three Amigos is too such a great movie.
Well, and as we said, one of my happy places is watching, Martin Short dance. So, of course, I love Three Amigos.
Yeah.
And Chevy Chase, to me, he's probably never been funnier than he is in Three Amigos. I mean, his bits in Three Amigos kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And Galaxy Quest is really almost a perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, critic score for Galaxy Quest is 89%. I mean, that's pretty high to be up in the 90s. I mean, the Warriors critic score is 90. So yeah, that tells you a lot there. Ebert only gave it 3 stars, and he only gave Three Amigos 1 star, which, I mean, the critics only gave, 46% on Rotten Tomatoes. And both of those are just beloved films. And Three Amigos is so, it's kind of ingrained in sort of a little bit in pop culture. I mean, we all talk about El Guapo and all that kind of stuff, and I knew
Plethora,
and all that. Plethora, yeah. So it's surprising to me to see that, but it's still a fantastic movie. And I think that, you know, it was awesome to go back and watch that as well. Even though if you know how it ends, it has that weird, like, invisible, like, thing in the middle of the invisible man.
The invisible swordsman, And then the singing bush, easily the most jarring scene out of any movie that we watched for this year.
Like, out of the blue, there's going to be this supernatural stuff. Okay. Yeah. All right. And then so, we go ahead. Are you going
to say, and then speaking of, you know, things that are kind of out of the blue, American Psycho.
Yeah. American Psycho. That was one of my most surprising as well. It's one of the last ones that's the most surprising. How well that I would like that. I know my friend, like, played me in parts of it because we're like, you know, we love the band Genesis, and he played me the part where he talks about, you know, Genesis and the band Genesis and Tony Banks and Phil Collins and all that, and Michael Rutherford, and where it goes in that whole monologue diatribe. But I don't know, as violent as that film is, I was like worried, just like Kill Bill, of how much that I would, you know, be in the, you know, the violence. But then that whole plot twist of him being in a fantasy kind of changed the whole tone of that movie completely.
Well, and it's so dark. Like I was talking about, I talked a lot about how I think it's dark. I mean, it's a dark comedy. It's meant to be satire.
Yes.
And I think that takes some of the edge off of it as well.
Yeah, like that whole diatribe about the whole thing about the cards, you know, like the business cards. Yeah. You could definitely tell. Like, if that was earlier in the film, you'd be like, okay, this is ridiculous. it would just give away the whole cards, you know, of the movie at that point.
Or that scene where he breaks up with Reese Witherspoon and she's crying and he goes, "I'm sorry, you're just not that important to me." Makes me laugh every time. Christian Bale is so funny in that movie.
Yeah. Yes, very very black comedy satires, black comedy. But and then Wall Street.
Not a huge fan. Yeah. I thought I had a great bite. I thought Michael Douglas was great in it. I thought Martin Sheen was great in it.
You just love Martin Short so much.
I do. I've got him on the brain now. He's my little buttercup, apparently. But yeah, Martin Sheen with his great, like, wallet speech, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, I couldn't really get into it that much. I mean, I found it a little dry. Mm-hmm. But I was glad to finally see it and check it off the list.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, going back, it's just not as captivating now as it was, I guess, sort of back then. Because we now know, you know, kind of how greedy and how shady, like, Wall Street, like, really is, I guess.
Yeah, nope. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel groundbreaking anymore. No.
All right, so then we move on to... Also, one of your favorite actors with Heavyweights and Dodgeball.
Yeah. Ben Stiller's a jerk, basically. Yeah. That was what that episode was about.
A fitness jerk.
Weirdly. Basically the same character in both movies. Yeah. What struck me about this the most, what I remember most about this episode was I'd forgotten how culturally important dodgeball is. Seems like a weird thing to say, man, but that movie's had a big impact on pop culture.
I think it has the perfect movie title of all the video of this season because it just says the thing, dodgeball. It doesn't say anything else. That is it.
A true underdog story.
Yeah, I mean, that's the subtitle, but because they had to have something because it can't just be you know, dodgeball. But yes, I mean, when people talk about dodgeball, that's it, and it's so iconic, and you know, sports movies, you know what I mean? And Jason Bateman just like almost stole the show.
He's in it for like 10 minutes, and he just kills it, man. Yeah. But there's so many great side characters in that. There's so many funny parts to it. Like there's characters in there you could pull out that one character and they could support their own movie. That's how funny the characters in Dodgeball.
Yeah, and none of them like really, they just add to the movie. They don't really take away from it at all. So and then we do a movie that I've seen that I'd love, which was Fandango, and then a movie neither one of us has seen, Breaking Away, and where it's like this like college age, like moving on from, you know, childhood to adulthood.
Yeah, I really liked both these films. I like I said, I'd never seen either of them, and they were both big surprises for me. And like I found them both touching. I would recommend them to people. They're both great.
I mean, they really Breaking are. Away has a 94% like critic score. And Roger Ebert gave it a 4. You know, Quentin Tarantino talked about how much he loved Fandango in an interview. And, you know, he said it played at the theater for a week and I was there every single day. And, so, you know, that sort of like, you know, vagabond, like, you know, drifter kind of, you know, character. And I just thought it was amazing performances, from the actors. It was Kevin Costner and who was the other guy?
Judd Nelson.
I'm sorry, I'm bad at names.
You really are tired. Yes, you really are tired.
I'm sorry, today, man. I was kind of sick this morning. Okay. I'm trying to make it through.
We are persevering for you, our audience. So yeah. Mm.
So, but yeah, I mean, absolutely, amazing movie. And then Breaking Away, just like really surprisingly good.
Yeah, like I thought it would be interesting. I thought I'd be like, okay, that was nice. I'm glad I watched it. But it really touched me, and you know, it was really enjoyable. I found it very heartwarming, a very well-made movie. I mean, but then I realized it was done by Peter Yates, who did The Friends of Eddie Coyle, and so many other really great films, and it all made sense. But yeah, great performances, good directing, a really touching, simple story. It's a movie that I'm glad that we took a chance on.
Yeah, I think both those movies, you walk away just really thinking a lot more after you watch it. You know, they're really like thinking movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. But not like in like a sad way, but in like kind of a wistful way. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Because they're both about like real life. You know what I mean? They're the most like sort of touching movies about like real life. Like they're not like, you know, Dodgeball or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not zany.
No. They're definitely dramas. But all right, so
well, speaking of definitely dramas, let's go into our next set of episodes. God. This is probably our most misguided episode.
You mentioned one of the episodes, like when we talk about Tender Murphy's, the one that we took a chance on. I think this was the one that we took a bigger chance on. And talk about bombs.
I actually kind of forgot this one. Yeah.
Talk about bombs. You want to talk about some real bombs?
Yeah, this was in retrospect, this was not a good idea.
Fat Man and Little Boy and the Manhattan Project. I mean, I'd seen, you know, I've seen the Manhattan Project several times when I was younger. I thought, oh, this is a great movie. And then, you know, I've seen parts of Fat Man and Little Boy, and I was like, oh, that'd be good to, like, watch, because it was done so seriously. It was done so, you know, just fell flat on both of them, didn't it?
Yeah, just both a little boring, and man, Fat Man and Little Boy, really boring and depressing on top of that.
And talk about not agreeing with Roger Ebert. He gave Manhattan Project 4 stars.
Well, Manhattan Project's okay.
Okay.
It's got a great John Lithgow performance. We got to talk about how great John Lithgow was because of that, you know, which I will always love to talk about how great John Lithgow is.
Yeah. I think he played outdone himself in playing that the scientist for sure.
Yeah, he elevates the entire thing. I mean, it's because the whole thing's forgettable except for him.
And really, if you're a fan of Stranger Things, I think it is a must watch.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's got a lot of DNA with Stranger Things.
Yeah. All right. Then that really inspired us to like lift some things up and like have something good. And so we watched because it reminded us of this whole, you know, like war thing and the whole Red Scare between us and Russia and the you know, the Cold War. So we had to watch War Games. We had to like cleanse our palate, right? And do a watch along with War Games.
Yeah, we wanted to watch, we watched along with one of my favorite films, and then we wanted to watch along with one of your favorite films. We thought it would only be fair and bring balance to the whole thing.
And, 93% critic score on War Games. Roger Ebert gave it a 4. has a 76% you know, audience score with Rotten Tomatoes. And I just adore this film. I saw this film when I was really young and really impressionable. And, you know, you just have to love Lightman's character and how it all plays out and how he plays such a vital role in, you know, saving the whole world from nuclear disaster, you know what I mean? And Matthew Broderick just, like, really bringing that character to life, really.
Yeah, I think it's one of his best roles. I mean, I think it's his best young role.
Yeah.
For sure. And it's just an enjoyable film. It's one that holds up very, very well, even though the technology's dated. It's just an enjoyable flick.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it just moves along. And, I mean, Ally Sheedy is just adorable. So it just keeps you moving. And it always, to me, I always found it great about how much the pacing of that show, of that movie, just really kind of like builds and builds and builds and builds, till you kind of have, like, you know, the moment at the end. And the production that went into creating that set is amazing.
Yeah, the War Room set of War Games is really impressive, for sure.
All right, so moving on. So then we did one of your favorite movies, The Monster Squad.
Yeah, well, we're catching up with modern day almost. Yeah, this was for our Halloween episode. We got another timely episode. Yeah. We sort of made up for the James Bond debacle by getting out a Halloween episode the week of Halloween.
Right.
How amazing is that?
Yeah, we decided to do, like, your idea was to do, like, PG horror movies. And we thought of Poltergeist because it is rated PG, oddly enough. And then we did Monster Squad,
which is PG-13. Yeah. But once I thought, well, you know, kids in danger. And then we have all our monsters covered. We have ghosts, werewolves, Gilman, Dracula, and Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, and the mummy, you know, of course.
And the mummy. And the Gilman being Swamp Thing without being named the Swamp Thing.
Yeah, or the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, Creature of the Black Lagoon. But yeah, it's a fantastic movie, so fun, so enjoyable. I can almost show that to my kids, and they would really like it, except for some of the language bits in it, you know.
Yeah. I just love that it's, again, we talked about this a lot on the show, I love just how it's so unconcerned with detail.
No, just not detail, but the dialogue is great. The storyline, like, you get all the characters pretty, you know, pretty quickly. It's all pretty self-explanatory. And then, you know, like, yeah, like you say, like, you know, like we say, stuff just happens. Those kids, like, being in that group, like, you know, it's like, he's like, yep, this is what we're going to do. We're like, we're the Monster Squad. We're going to take care of it. You know what I mean? They just, like, they just own it, you know?
Yeah, and it's snappy, and it's quick, and it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
And Poltergeist, man, Poltergeist is a classic. That is such a great film.
All right. Yeah, it touches home in so many ways from my childhood, for sure. And I think it's, you know, watching it now, it's not as scary. It's still, like, mystic, and I didn't really get the whole thing about, you know, death and going to the other side when I was a kid. I just kind of got scared of that monster or whatever that came out of the, you know, the cloud or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just kind of a weird and, you know, spooky, but I think, like, you know, once again, I think it's part of, you know, the Amblin Entertainment, like, Spielberg touched magic. I know he didn't direct it, but, you know, you can just tell it has that feel to it.
Yeah, it has his influence in it. It reminded me a lot of Amazing Stories. Like, it even were Amazing Stories from when we were kids, the show Spielberg produced. And it reminded me a lot of that. But what struck me about Poltergeist, while watching it again after all this time, was just how relatable and likable and believable all the characters are in it. And that's something that most horror films just don't get right nowadays. But Poltergeist is just full of characters you like and understand.
Well, I think that is the magic of Spielberg. Like, he has a great way of setting up the characters as just normal, everyday people. And they're just like a normal 100% everyday American family, and then all this stuff happens. You know what I mean? And Craig T. Nelson just plays like the everyday dad that's just like so believable. Yeah. And that's why I was so good at playing, you know, coach for so many years, you know?
Yeah, he's Mr. Incredible, man. He's the super dad.
Yeah. And then it was once again so fun. It's like eating your, you know, all of your Halloween candy on the first night. It was watching Batman and Batman Returns.
Probably the biggest films we're ever going to talk about on this show.
Yeah.
Again, so fun and so enjoyable to revisit, but it's a lot watching those back to back.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I remember watching Batman Returns in the theater and just realizing like how iconic every shot is. Every shot is like a picture in a comic book. It's like a block in the comic book. And it's absolutely amazing. But yeah, I mean, too much of it. And that's why I relate it to like candy, right? It's like too much of it. And you're just like, whoa, you know, because it's so serious and then like so odd and strange and weird. But it's still so much fun and fun stories, you know?
Yeah, but again, much like with Excalibur, I was really struck by the horniness of Batman Returns. Like that is one horny film, and it really caught me off guard rewatching it. But still, super fun. We finally got to talk about Christopher Walken again. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get you to do a Christopher Walken episode in season 3. That's my main goal.
You know, I was doing a little bit of Walken before we started the show. I said, you know, we're gonna talk about all these movies, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Light of Day, you know, it was, you know, some of these movies are really good. You just can't like stop doing Walken.
Yeah. Once you start, it's really hard to cut it off. Really, I know.
It's like a faucet. I can't stop. Yeah. Stop me. Save me. Save me. We got to get to our last two movies, which is, Broadcast News and Home for the Holidays.
With our focus on the great Holly Hunter. Hunter, yeah. The adorable, incredibly talented Holly Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, just absolutely fantastic performance and everything that she's in.
I love both those movies, yeah. Like, those movies are, to me, they're such nice films about relationships, but they're not conventional. Like, you can have movies about romance and relationships, and I had them be like typical rom-com kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we also got to see like a great Albert Brooks performance in Broadcast News. We get a great like drugged up Robert Downey Jr. performance in Home for the Holidays. I know that's terrible to say, but he's so much fun in Home for the Holidays. I really like both those films, and I thought that was a great, nice note to end our series on.
Yeah, it really was. And I wish Albert Brooks was just in more films. I know you say he plays like these schlubby characters, but, you know, like he was in, The Scout. You know, he was in Dr. Doolittle and, you know, but.
So you've never seen like the movies that he actually does, like he actually writes and directs himself. So that's one thing we're definitely going to do in the next season. So we're going to do an Albert Brooks double feature of the movies that he's completely in charge of.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We're going to do that. Yeah, so that you can learn more about him. He's great.
Yeah, he was writer and director of a lot of different movies, like The Muse. Let's see, what else was the Modern Romance?
You gotta see Defending Your Life. You have to see Defending Your Life.
Okay. All right.
It's a movie about, I'll go and give you a little preview of it. We'll get off topic for a second. It's about a guy who dies, goes to limbo basically. And he basically has to defend his life so he can find out whether he goes to heaven or if he has to go and be reincarnated and try again.
Right.
And it is a funny movie.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, I look forward to that. I look forward to that because I really I really dig his stuff and his work, and I thought his performance in Broadcast News was even better than William Hurt's, to be quite honest. You know what I mean? As a as a supporting, you know what I mean? William Hurt was up for the you know, Academy Award for like best actor or whatever, but Albert Brooks should have won Academy Award for best supporting actor because that was just an amazing performance. Not to take anything away from Holly Hunter, because I think that she, you know, she's just so believable in everything that she's in.
Yeah, despite that, she never loses that Southern accent. Yeah, she's totally convincing and everything she's ever in. No, man, I mean that seriously. Yeah, that's how good she is.
Yeah.
Like, she could find real emotional honesty in things without having to do, like, stupid method actor stuff where she has to, like, take on a funny accent or gain a bunch of weight, you know?
And I mean, I know as well as you do, the first time we saw Holly Hunter was in Raising Arizona, and you're just like, who is this girl? Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, you're right. She's so unbelievable, you know, adorable and funny and just absolutely amazing.
So, and that brings us to the end of everything, my friends.
So what do we have? We haven't even talked about what's going to be in store for season three. I mean, our third season, my friend.
Well, you know, God, I mean, I don't know. We've got plans. Let's just say that we don't. You know, do you want
to? We got ideas.
Do you want to throw some of them out?
I can't remember all our ideas. I got them written down somewhere. I don't remember.
Yeah, well, I've been noodling some ideas that I'm going to pass you later on. I'm not going to say them on air because I don't want to put you on the spot. But I got some neat ideas based on what was popular this year.
Okay,
and. But we do. We definitely have things in the cooker. We're not going to stop doing the show anytime soon because we really enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
We're still doing a lot of articles for the website. That's one thing I'm really proud of for this past year is how much the actual website has grown. If you guys have not been to our website, there's a ton of written content on there now. Like between myself, Ryan, a few other guys. Again, our silent superstars third partner, Patrick Bartlett, just... tons of written content on there now. Please check it out if you haven't. I think I'm very proud of it. That's kind of my baby of this, and I think it's. We're doing really great work, and I'm so proud that that's grown so much since where we were with the first season.
Yeah, and you know, if people want, if you're out on the Twitterverse or you know Facebook, you could find us. We'll have the thing at the end of the show, but it's just. Video Culture 2 is our handle on Twitter. You can find us
because some jerk is sitting on video culture. Let's be honest.
I mean, it happens. You know, it's a name.
It's some guy in the Netherlands with one follower. It annoys the piss out of me.
Well, I mean,
I'm gonna say if I ever find you, man, that's all I'm saying.
I still love the way you say it though in the outro. You know, like two guys talking about movies. It's perfect. So it all works out.
Yeah,
right.
But so I gotta ask you, Ryan. Yeah. This whole show was about the journey of us kind of going through these films together. You discovering movies, me rediscovering stuff, and basically, a lot of it was you trying to kind of learn what it meant to be a movie fanboy like me. So how do you feel now that we've gone through another year of this? We've now reached 2 years of this nonsense, my friend.
I mean, I look at movies slightly different. I look at it from, like, because I'm also doing, like, a lot of the research. Like, you know, the production, like, sort of thing. Like, what were they really after? What were the writers, like, really getting at? What was the director really getting at? What is the producer trying to, you know... how are they trying to spin this to make a profit to appeal to wide audiences and stuff like that? So, like, what was their really goal? You know, their end goal here. What works and what doesn't work? And it's a little bit, you know, not to take away from the enjoyment of the movie, but it's just another aspect to think about, like, why you're watching the movie. And I love to watch a lot of these movies again. That I saw, like, you know, way back when, like War Games and Batman and National Treasure and Dodgeball and Galaxy Quest and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Fandango and Innerspace. And it was still awesome to discover, you know, great movies, like I mentioned, like The Warriors and American Psycho, Tender Mercy, Tender Mercies, Red Dawn, and Near Dark. Also Buckaroo Banzai, but also you know, stuff like Breaking Away that sort of stuff. So it was still, you know, an Excalibur, and you know, so it was still it's such an enjoyable process to go through and watch these movies, and I look forward to discovering more, you know, movies, because I think that each time we discover, you know, movies that we like, and especially like both of us, like, they really, you know, sort of resonate with, you know, either something that's just like purely entertaining or like really speaks to like the human condition kind of thing. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's just, and to see and to watch, movies that like Quentin Tarantino and through these directors' eyes and stuff like that is just like severely, like sort of fascinating.
And you know, for me, a lot of it is the idea of trying to watch stuff I wouldn't normally watch. Like, this is me pushing myself out of my comfort zone. Because if I had my druthers, I would just watch some genres over and over again, certain things. But I wouldn't necessarily watch a movie like Light of Day or Tender Mercies unless I was, you know, had a reason to. And that's why I like doing this. Mm-hmm. Is it forces me to grow as a film fan, and then to be able to talk about movies I wouldn't normally talk about, or write about movies I wouldn't normally write about. And I love doing this with you, man, because it gives us a chance to hang out and talk.
Yeah.
Especially in this time of social distance. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking forward to doing this for another year. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about where we're going. Mm-hmm. And it's still fun for me, man. I guess is the best way to say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, and not only to, like you say, like, discover movies that I haven't found. Because, I mean, you've already seen The Warriors. You've already seen American Psycho. You've already seen Red Dawn and Near Dark, and I'm watching them and discovering them for, you know, like, the first time, really. But to me, I also think that, you know, I don't have an excuse to go back and watch Poltergeist. Do I really want to go back and watch Poltergeist? Well, you know, not really. But when I watch it, I'm like, this is an amazing, you know, piece of cinema.
Yeah, I'm glad I watched it now.
And yeah, it's exactly correct. And I say that about a lot of films. That's probably where a majority of the films that I've already seen, sort of fall into place, like The Lost Boys, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't watch The Lost Boys like every year, but I mean, I'm like, okay, we'll watch it. Okay. That's great. Glad I watched it. You know?
Yeah. Because sometimes it's easy to forget how great some of these films are. Cause you know, you just take them for granted.
Yeah.
That's another nice thing about this. Like getting to rewatch Interspace or, you know, Galaxy Quest or Three Amigos.
Well, I love those movies.
but I mean, when's the last time you watched them?
Oh, yeah, it's been a while, since I've seen Interspace. And yeah, I was really glad I watched, because I saw it so many times. And it's still so fun.
But it's like revisiting an old friend you hadn't seen in years, and that's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And that's to me one of the pleasures of this show. Is getting to have that kind of rediscovery of things that you love. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, and if you want to hear more about any particular episode, like I said, if something really struck you as like, I want to hear more about that movie, everything is archived on our website at video-culture.com. And you can listen to all of our episodes there. Just go to the episodes page. And it goes back all the way to season one, where we talked about, you know, what was the first movie, like Vice Versa, and
yeah, still the one of the worst things we've watched. The very first episode we ever talked about, yeah. If you haven't heard it, we talked about body swap movies, yeah. And we talked about Vice Versa and 18 Again. And 18 Again is still the high water mark, if you will, of crap movies we've watched.
Yeah, and I mean, and I looked this season, and you know, I rearranged things like by the critic score, like the in the audience score. So if I sort by the audience score, right, the highest grossing, like the highest movies from Rotten Tomatoes are Tender Mercies, Breaking Away, and The Warriors. Okay, the lowest are
Let's see. I got to go the other way. Z to A. Wait, hold on. The other way is Cool World, Fat Man and Little Boy, The Manhattan Project, and The Golden Child.
Yeah, yeah, that's not surprising.
And then Light of Day right after that. And then The Toy right after that. That almost like falls in line with you know, almost our thinking, right? Is that about it?
Well, sometimes the critics and the audiences are not wrong.
Yeah, but it seems to me that more means that we're sort of more in line with the audience, really. You know what I mean? Even though the critics.
Well, because I think that we try to put ourselves in the shoes of like the average person. Mm-hmm. At least I do when I think about films. You know, I try to be educated, but I try not to be snooty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. But I also think that the Rotten Tomatoes audience score. I mean, there's definitely scores where critics like say Broadcast News. I mentioned on the last episode, it was a 98% Rotten Tomatoes score. But still the highest like audience score from the movies from this season was Tender Mercies. And that's only at 89%. So it didn't even crack 90%. So I think that there's still like a lot more dissent and a lot more, sort of widespread sort of, you're never going to get a wide agreement, you know, from audiences on certain, you know, on certain things. So,
well, and I think the discourse is, of course, one of the reasons the discourse, of course, that kind of rhymes. Yeah. But the discourse is one of the reasons why that we do this show. Because I mean, we, you know, discourse and conversation is one of the great things about appreciating art. And if movies are anything, they are art.
Yeah, I mean, and I've talked to people that really love Cool World, you know, because they're really art fans and they're comic book fans and they think it's great. So,
and every movie is somebody's favorite movie.
Yeah, very much.
That's so. From being a critic, that's what I've learned, is every movie is somebody's favorite. Worst thing you can think of out there, there's somebody who adores it and they love it.
Do you think somebody's favorite movie is 18 Again?
I'm sure.
All right.
I mean, probably John Slattery, the guy who starred in it. Yeah. But,
all right.
But anyway, brother, I think it's about that time that we turn the lights off for another year and see everybody again in January.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward, just like everybody else, to a new year. It's not like, you know, the coronavirus is going to go away in 2021. But, you know, let's hope for a better 2021 than we had in 2020. I wish that we can be together, and you know, let's just we won't hope for anything. Let's just hope that we continue to watch and enjoy movies, right?
Yeah, we're still going to be here. We're still going to be watching movies with you guys during the downtime between now and when the new season starts. The website will be updated every week with an article or possibly more every week to keep the content flowing. So please check out the website again during the downtime. We will be back in January to start this all over again for season 3.
Season 3. And until then, I'm Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Estri. Go watch some movies, guys. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. We love you. Be safe.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
came a long, long way tonight. All the way to Hollywood, California, via Sweden, via Paris, via Italian, via France, via London, England, via the great state of New Jersey, and halfway across the United States. I want to thank you all for inviting me into your living room tonight. I know there's millions of you out there. I know you're downhearted. I know you're disenchanted. I know you're disillusioned. I know there's 57 channels and nothing on. Just one thing I want to know tonight. There's just one thing I want to know. But first I want you to get up off your couch. I want you to put the popcorn down. I want you to come over to the TV set. I want you to turn it up real loud. I want you to take off all your clothes now. And what I want to